Mobility Matters is supported with funding from the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration in the interest of information exchange. The NJTPA and FHWA assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of places, seen pictures of the rest. But of all the places I can't think of, I like Jersey best.
Good morning, and welcome to Mobility Matters. I'm your host, Bill Neary. Thank you for tuning in. I'm the executive director of Keep Middlesex Moving. It's Middlesex County's nonprofit transportation management association. For over 30 years, KMM has been working with commuters, with employers, local county and state governments to reduce traffic congestion and improve air quality. We promote and support carpools, vanpools, mass transit, bicycling, and walking. We provide timely information about road and transit conditions. We present safety programming for children, teens, and adults of all ages. And we play an important role in regional development, planning, and zoning. Well, today's topic is very important, I think. We're focusing on mass transit, and in particular, New Jersey Transit and the Gateway Tunnel Project. The Northeast Corridor is the most heavily used passenger rail line in the entire country, with more than 2,000 intercity and commuter trains supporting approximately 800,000 daily passenger trips across eight states and in Washington, D.C. It serves as a region that is home to 17% of the U.S. population, and it's an area that contributes 20% of the nation's gross domestic product. The Northeast Corridor is a vital artery in our region, and it's a critical element in our national transportation network. It's linking millions of people to good jobs and connecting this region to the rest of America. Today we have some key players in our conversation about the Northeast Corridor and New Jersey Transit, and I'm happy to introduce our guests. We have Kevin Corbett, who's the president and CEO of New Jersey Transit. We have the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee of New Jersey, the Senator Patrick Dignan, and the chief public outreach and chief spokesman for the Gateway Development Corporation, Stephen Sigmund. So we're going to start the show today by introducing our first guest, Kevin Corbett. As the CEO and president of New Jersey Transit, you've done a lot of work in the last year or so, Mr. Corbett, and I want to welcome you to our show. But before arriving at New Jersey Transit, Kevin was a top executive with AECOM, an international infrastructure company, and a solid track record for handling complex projects with so many moving parts. Over the arc of your public service career, you played a key role in the redevelopment of Times Square and a post-9/11 revitalization in Lower Manhattan. I want to thank you for calling in today. So not only are you an executive director and president of New Jersey Transit, you're also the commuter on the Morris Essex line, I understand.
That's right, Bill. And have been for, closing on 30 years.
There you go. You understand what New Jersey Transit, how important it is to us. So what are some of the things you're doing, I think, that makes things easier for our commuters?
Well, yeah, I think not dissimilar from what you've seen in many transit agencies since the, particularly on the rail side, since the private sector, went bankrupt in the 60s and 70s. Transit agencies have had struggled to get regular funding. So certainly the last decade for New Jersey Transit, we used to be the premier transit agencies in the country, and we're doing a lot of things, Midtown Direct Service, new equipment, Secaucus, transfer, and a lot of the other things that we've did. And over the last decade, certainly we had a real significant cut in funding and, my opinion is we really have to look for the best thing we give our customers. It's not sexy, but it's getting good, reliable, state of good repair. There was a long period of disinvestment. We're now fortunately getting the investment and getting the management in place to be able to get that first, make sure we can walk before we run. It's not sexy, but that, I think, to the average commuter, they want to be able to get to work on time, get home on time, go to events, visit family, go to a hospital, whatever, and they need reliability. So that's been the real focus of, getting back to basics and getting it right first before we start moving on to some of the other things.
Well, that's excellent, because we point out in our TMA world that people talk about subsidies for mass transit and the expense involved in that. I think people don't realize the number one subsidy for transportation is the single occupancy vehicles. The money we spend for roads and bridges and maintenance of that is far more tax dollars than anything we do for mass transit. So I think it's important that we look at the investments as mass transit for all the good things it can do in terms of reducing traffic, improving air quality, and making things more efficient. So I think it's great that you're bringing this thing up to date.
I think the public, you always have a few people, you can't please everyone, but being a daily rider on the M&E, people will ask me, one hand they'll have different complaints, which certainly they should if they see something wrong, but they'll ask, like, why'd you take the job? And I think they understand that it's a real challenge. And for us, we need to have we have to get the investments we're given only 50% of our revenue comes from the fare box and other sources of the revenue, and the rest comes from the state. So we have to prove that we are spending that money wisely, both to the public and to the legislation and the government.
Well, I understand also that you had an engineer shortage that you've had to deal with, and I think you're working on that kind of problem, because when you're talking about reliability, you need to make sure the personnel is in place also.
Yeah, that was certainly one of the surprises that I didn't know. I certainly, as somebody who's spent his life in the transportation sector and involved with major projects, certainly aware of New Jersey Transit's legacy systems, which are great. What built the country 100 years ago, and a lot of them are, from the old days, the Erie Railroad, the Lackawanna, the Central New Jersey. And when they went bankrupt, we took over those assets, the public sector. And over the years, as I said, they've been up and down funding. But I think that is really looking forward is the how do we take that, and it's a great system when it runs right.
Well, we do spend a lot of time talking about the trains that going into some of the economic engines of New Jersey, but there's also an incredible bus system that you have that covers the state. I don't think there's another transit agency in America that has as much reach within the communities, local and national, and not national, local and citywide, rural, everything. There's New Jersey Transit buses throughout the state.
Well, that's right. And you touched on the engineers, and is also on the bus, where there was a period of disinvestment, and particularly, as you said, on the engineers. It takes 20 months to train an engineer. And we, people said, we lost engineers to Metro North or others. And there was a little bit of that. But really, it was we just stopped training engineers. And as they retired, we weren't training for backfill. So we are, still this summer, we had a class that just graduated, 12. And, we're going to have in the fall, in October, November, we ramped up as soon as I got in. But I was really shocked at the lack of qualified personnel on the rail side. And don't blame engineers for taking summer vacation. They earn it. But we need to have that bench built up. On the bus side, as you touch on, we are the nation's largest statewide transit agency. And on the bus side, after New York City, we're the largest bus operator in the country. And we may have been able to make significant strides in hiring and training and giving, using what the private sector you'd use, bonus sign-on payments. To get drivers with commercial driver's license to come over, and it's a not well-publicized story, but we've had a really dramatic increase in the last 6 months with new drivers getting and ordering new buses, getting delivery of new buses. Train cars take 4 or 5 years. We've ordered train cars, but, our riders won't see those for a number of years to replace the old ones that are, breaking down. They're 40-plus years old, some of them. So getting the personnel, particularly on the bus side, has been people are seeing it. We have a lot more buses out on the road helping to deal, particularly on the northern part of the state where we have real heavy demand.
And not to mention the important part of training to go with these critical jobs. People need to be trained because safety has got to be still a top priority in so many ways.
Absolutely. As I said, the State of Good Repairs also makes sure that we have good qualified people, you look at where one of my first challenges was putting in positive train control. That had been neglected, a very complex rail system, safety system. New Jersey Transit was only 12% of the way where it needed to be by last December. And we had to inflict a lot of pain on our rail customers to make sure we met that federal deadline. But it was serious, and I don't blame Amtrak. I wouldn't want that liability if I was the head of Amtrak. If there had been an accident and we were not in a PTC compliant, So we were able to get that done. It was a really tremendous effort and a great team effort with Amtrak and with all our team and consultants. And we pulled that off. We still have to have the full revenue service by December 2020. But that safety is paramount.
Well, Kevin, can you give me a little, maybe a short way of describing what this positive track control is? Because I know basically, but I don't quite understand. It's designed to make sure the tracks are talking to the train. The conductor knows what's going on in case something else happens. It's dangerous. Is that what it is?
That's right. Well, it's more than that. It's a very sophisticated computer-based system, so that we have equipment that's installed on the train. I mean, they have computer racks that now you can open one part on anywhere in the train, and the rail cars that looks like the space program, a whole rack of computers, and it's constantly, you know, every second going as it goes along the track, monitoring sensors at the track and along the roadbed that goes to a central computer that instantaneously feeds back to the train to say, wait a minute, this section of track, you're only supposed to be doing 45 miles an hour. The engineers generally know that, but if for any reason somebody falls asleep or has some artifact, whatever, the system will automatically start to brake even and override the engineer should something like that actually happen. And very sophisticated, and it goes between the track, back and forth the train, the central computer, and it goes the whole distance between on all our rails.
A long way from steam locomotives, huh?
Yeah, and certainly people may be familiar with that horrible train crash down in Philadelphia, Amtrak, just north of Philadelphia a number of years ago. Those are the kind of accidents. They're extremely rare. Rail is still the safest way to travel, eight times safer than being in a car. But those are the kind of things to make sure even those kind of things cannot happen.
Well, I think it's great we're looking at that. We're going to be discussing also with the senator and with Steve about this tunnel project. I know that's something that's near and dear to all of us in New Jersey, making sure we figure out ways to get this thing done. Do you have anything to add you want to talk about how important this is for our economic engine, our quality of life, and all the things that go with a good transit system?
Glad to. And I know Steve will be addressing some of that later specifically, but as much as I love transportation, as I spent my lifetime in it, it's a fascinating field. The reality is transportation is just the vehicle for economic growth and vitality. And right now our system, being 100 plus years, the tunnel, Portal Bridge, those are all built by the Pennsylvania Railroad. There's a great book about that, Conquering Gotham. But if we want to make sure that our economy, that we get people to move in and out, the regional economy, we are beyond a choke point, as anybody who rides in and out of New York Penn like I used to until I took this job, it's a conga line. We have trains every 2 minutes, queuing in to go into a New York Penn station, and that's the maximum you can get. That's more than a New York City subway. So at rush hour, we're maxed out. So the only way, and if one of those tunnels goes out, the implications are, dramatic, to put it mildly. Think of what 9/11 was like when the Holland Tunnel was shut. So, we have emergency plans, but none of them can deal with the consequences, anywhere smoothly or adequately if one of those tunnels goes out. So those are critical for our economy, for our public, and for the nation's economy.
Well, before we take our first break, I want to know what's your take on the current state of transit advocacy in New Jersey?
I must say I was sort of shocked compared to what I've seen nationally and internationally. New Jersey, I think, takes a lot for granted. But when I went to the governor's budget address, and I was coming through a crowd because I was coming from another meeting, and there were thousands of people with signs saying, save our schools or save our health care. There wasn't a single sign about save our transit system. And I think, it's fine for certain people who are advocates or say they're advocates who want to knock us when we do something wrong. That's fine. We want to address any of those concerns, but you also need to have business leaders, responsible business leaders. It affects the major corporations getting their people to work. That I'm surprised that I find it fairly weak, and I hope to really work with civic groups and business groups to really help get that advocacy, because we do need reliable, sustainable funding. Right now it's sort of the bucket brigade, year by year, maybe we get some money, maybe we don't, or how much. And that's not, the way any corporation should be doing their investment planning on capital side, or, hiring people to look that they don't know next year, if they're going to be budget to cover them. So I think the advocates can, when we say it, it sounds self-serving, but when you have business leaders, civic groups, environmental justice groups saying, yes, we need a healthy transit system, that certainly, I think, helps balance the other pressures from healthcare, education, or any other sector.
I think you bring up a good point about the business sector. I mean, they've managed to kind of take advantage of the fact that they have such a great transit system for so many years. It's time they look at what it means to them and their employers for retention, recruiting, everything else. If we have a good transit system, we actually have a good program that everybody, businesses, can work on. I know Steve wanted to add about how they can do with the businesses, what businesses can do.
Yeah, thanks, Bill and Kevin. I just wanted to add to your point, Kevin, about the advocacy community. I mean, I do find in the transportation community about Gateway are great advocates at sort of the policy and government level. Like, people are really out there and supporting the projects, as you know, Kevin. I think you guys made a really important decision in putting a customer advocate in place in Stuart Matter, because you all have a 80,000 person army who can use the tools of modern communication in Twitter, social media, et cetera, to really help drive these issues. Because I think our transportation advocates are really good on the policy level and the government relations level, but not as good on the grassroots level. And I think that's something you guys are working on.
Right. Thank you. And Stephen, that, Bill brings up an issue that I really, as much as, running the system, improving the reliability, et cetera, the other thing is Steve gets to is communication. And that's one thing I heard a lot. The governor harped on it as well. Even if we're doing things right, we don't communicate. But if we do have problems, trains and all, we weren't getting the word out. People were frustrated waiting on a platform, not knowing. If you give them a heads up, which we now do, we've really improved our comms, push notifications, so if their train gets canceled, they get it right on their iPhone 2 hours beforehand. So something like that, it's never good news, but at least they can plan. And most people, when you sell that, they accept a reasonable level. These things happen occasionally. If a tree falls on the line or something like that, they say, okay, they get it. But then at least they can make their plan and communicate. Improving communications at all level is something we really put a lot of effort. Stu is one, as you mentioned, our customer advocate. And the other is really our comms group has really stepped up, worked with our operations to get that information out as quickly so people can deal with whatever situation is happening.
And when we're talking about communication, we appreciate you taking the time, Kevin, to join us, because this is a show that I think is important that people can hear what's going on in terms of mobility in the state of New Jersey. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back after the break to join our other guests, Senator Deignan and Steve Sigmund. And, Kevin, I hope you can stick around. Thank you.
I will, certainly, for the senator.
Think it's safe to text or talk on your cell phone while you drive? No way, no how, not ever. Nearly 6,000 people died last year from distracted driving. So forget the phone and mind the road. Learn more about distracted driving at KMM.org or call Keep Middlesex Moving at 732-745-4465. That's KMM.org. Funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
The new Talk Radio 1450 WCTC, the voice of Central Jersey.
Hi, I'm Peggy Ballester Howells, host of The Garden Show. Whether it's planting seeds in the spring, battling summer insects, planting fall bulbs, or tending houseplants throughout the winter, there's always a way to play in the dirt. Share your garden adventures with us Sunday mornings from 8 to 10.
The Garden Show, Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, brought to you in part by Barty Farms on the new Talk Radio 1450 WCTC.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Are you liking Keep Middlesex Moving on Facebook, following them on Twitter, and safely snapping pictures of your commute on Instagram? Connect with KMM online and find out what everyone is talking about. Download the free NJ Traffic app, register for our carpool, get your New Jersey Transit bus and transit info, and access to their fantastic giveaway programs. To connect with KMM online, log on to KMM.org and click on the Facebook and Twitter icon, funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore.
Welcome back to Mobility Matters. We're here with Kevin Corbett, the President and CEO of New Jersey Transit, with the Chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, Senator Patrick Deignan, and the Chief Public Outreach and Chief Spokesman for the Gateway Development Corporation, Stephen Sigmund. I'm Bill Neary from Keep Middlesex Moving. I want to thank you for joining us today. My next guest is the New Jersey State Senator Patrick Deignan, a friend I've known for many years, and he's the chairman now of the Transportation Committee for the New Jersey Senate. Last week, I know the Senator, by the way, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks.
Last week, along with Majority Leader Loretta Weinberg and Minority Leader Tom Kaine, you introduced legislation to establish a Gateway Development Corporation Commission to oversee planning, funding, and construction of new rail tunnels and other projects that will double Trans-Hudson rail capacity. It will provide one-seat rides from Manhattan to all New Jersey transit lines. So what's the goal of this legislation? Where do you think we're heading with that?
We're heading in the right direction. But before I answer that, Bill, I know hopefully the director's still on the phone.
I am.
I cannot think of a better fit for the state of New Jersey than Director Corbett. In fact, I joked with him when I first met him. Did he realize what he was getting himself into? And he laughed and he said yes, and he was ready for the task. And was he ever? In fact, when we first talked about positive train control, I said, you're never going to get it done by the end of the year. Not only did he get it done, he got it done earlier. We have to realize that for an eight-year period, New Jersey Transit was basically ignored. Funding was diverted from the Turnpike Authority. There was really no true funding source. The director came on board, jumped into the fray, dealt with these issues, and we have – I mean, Kevin, you were talking a few minutes ago about the communication part of it. If anything that has resonated with my constituents, it's that part. People understand that a train's going to be late. People understand that on a particular day you may have an engineer that didn't come to work and therefore the train – but they want to be able to realize what the schedule is. With the new system that you've put in place where people can actually look at their phones and know what the schedule is, it's just been a tremendous difference. And I have people actually, believe it or not, thanking me about that. So I just don't want it to go unheard. You deserve a lot of credit. You know the old expression, every crisis is an opportunity? If you had asked the citizens of New Jersey 5 years ago what one of their priorities were, let's be honest, transportation would not have been even close to the list. Now, as a result of the lack of attention over the prior 8 year period, it is a priority, and we are addressing that priority. And I just want to congratulate you, Kevin, for the work you've done.
Well, thank you. It only happens because we have great support from people like yourself and others.
Okay. Does that mean I have to give you the dollar that I promised to give you?
Not at all.
Now, in terms, Bill made me promise that I wouldn't joke, so I got to be serious today. We've been friends for a long time.
You know, these promises go sometimes.
You know, it's that Irish. We can't help ourselves. But anyhow, in all honesty, the legislation, I mean, I can take credit. Tom Kaine can take credit. But in all honesty, Loretta Weinberg has been the impetus, the focus, the energy behind this, and what the agreement that has been reached between New York and New Jersey. We're going to vote on it on Thursday. My understanding, New York is going to be doing it shortly, is really remarkable legislation. To put this complicated issue in such a fashion that both states are working together is really remarkable. And it's really that New York has agreed to a 50-50 split. The governors are given the opportunity to veto actions if they consider it to be inappropriate, and that's the way it should be. The governors are, you know, the buck stops there, and I just want to compliment Senator Weinberg for the work she's done.
Well, I think that's actually explains why it's so important. The fact that all these people you're talking about and the two states are really in the Trans-Hudson line is so important. The Trans-Hudson rail capacity is critically important if we're going to continue to develop in both states.
Absolutely. As we were talking about earlier, if that tunnel was a bridge, people would be afraid to take it. I recently, Ed Kevin was there also that day. The governor had a tour, and we took a tour through the tunnel. If the citizens really were able to see the condition it's in, it's just an outrage, an absolute outrage that the federal government is not stepping up to the plate and help giving the support that's necessary.
Well, when you're talking about the tunnel, you're also talking about a portal bridge.
Correct.
Which is the same age,
yep.
Which is rusty, which opens and closes to let the water traffic go through, the boats and stuff, but it has to be closed sometimes with sledgehammers when it doesn't close all the way.
It's
just backs up trains for miles.
It's like me on a Saturday, a sledgehammer and WD-40. That's not the way it's supposed to work.
Well, it's a good thing Mrs. Dygan knows where the sledgehammer is kept. That's a good thing. But I think you're talking critical, important stuff.
Kevin was going to say something. Go ahead,
Kevin.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in quick that, you know, particularly on Portal, and we're working closely with, the FTA and the FRA, where there is a project, and Steve will talk to Gateway more broadly, but that we are 100%, have all the environmental permits, 100% designed, ready to put out the bid. We have the outreach with the DPE community, the contracting community. So we just need to get that last hurdle over, and we can be getting that project out, you know, later this year.
Yeah,
we're that close on portal.
And not only are you 100% designed, Kevin, New Jersey Transit is the project sponsor on portal, but there's 100% of the local share in place already, a bonding commitment for up to $600 million. So there is essentially no argument by the federal government that the local partners are not doing everything that we can to move that project forward.
I mean, to me, that's the definition of an outrage. I mean, again, the state has gone forward. We're ready. We are literally ready to hit the ground running, and all we need is for the federal government to commit. You know, where in God's name are the priorities? As Bill said, what is it? 20% of the economy
is affected. Gross net by 20%.
Come on.
Well, the other part we always talk about too is also that the Transcontinental Railroad was built during the Civil War, that George Washington Bridge was built during the Depression, and when the country had its largest deficit after World War II, we were busy rebuilding Japan, Europe, and the interstate highway system. The country, when they sees the priorities as important as this, 20% of the GDP, I don't understand where the confusion or the disappointment that I have about it not being done.
I mean, you're talking about – this is the definition of an economic engine. And, I mean, anybody that needs to be convinced just hasn't been paying attention.
Well, not just the jobs that you do, build the tunnel and replace the bridge. Those are jobs – but then the long-term goal is to have people have easy transit to and from the economic engines of New York, Philadelphia, Washington, Boston. The whole thing is connected. It's all part of Northeast Corridor. So I do know that this year the budget that's going to be voted on in next week, I guess, there is a plan to put in place additional money for New Jersey Transit, which has not been done for so many years, Senator. So could you tell us a little bit more about what you're looking at for the long-term future?
I mean, you know, I know we read in the papers about, you know, some disputes that are going on in Trenton. But I think what's happening with New Jersey Transit this year is absolutely remarkable. I mean, the governor stopped the diversion, literally put true money into New Jersey Transit. And the Senate president, in conjunction with the speaker and with the governor's support, has actually put additional money. So we're talking about $75 million additional money into the budget this year, which was not there previously, which is true dedicated funding, not some diversion from another fund. And again, it just shows, as I said earlier, our first comment, a crisis is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for the leaders of our state and the governor, Senate president, and speaker all need to be complimented to make this a priority in this year's budget.
That's excellent. Do you think there'd be a possibility they're going to be able to restore the one-seat ride for the Raritan Valley line?
Well, I know that's a priority. I know that Tom Kaine, Senate Minority Leader Tom Kaine, is considering it a priority. And I think it's some and Kevin gets it. It's just at this particular point getting the necessary manpower in place and be able to fund it. Nobody thinks it's a bad idea. Nobody's trying to stop it. It's just basically, fix the wounds that are existing first before you can go forward with new initiatives.
Which is why I think it's important, the communication like that. People do want to hear, but they do expect instant results. Kevin, you said it was 20 months to train an engineer. Is that what it was?
Exactly. And we're closing in. We have 6 classes there. So, starting October, November, we'll have the engineers back. Restoring the RVL one-seat ride on off-peak. Right now we're doing work, or Amtrak is doing work in New York Penn Station. So, you know, we're had to divert some trains to Hoboken, still running the same number of trains, but we had less slots available in New York while they're fixing the switches inside Penn Station. But that'll be over in September, and then we'll look to bring the in the fall as we get the engineers and get everything smoothed out after Amtrak finishes that work to restoring the off-peak one-seat ride for RVL customers. The longer term, really, I think we know it ties into the gateway program, the tunnels. We need more capacity to be able to get more trains into New York so we can expand, get RVL service and increase our other services, the frequency of other services into New York. Right now, it's 110% maxed out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We're still talking about the clogged artery there.
Yeah.
That's really one of the issues,
exactly.
Despite what you can do. So I know that some of the issues you wanted to talk about, Senator, had to do, but what we've learned from this issues when Kevin first got the job about WrestleMania and the things that happened there, That was something that gave – it's what I think we just talk about the squeaky wheels getting grease because everybody heard about that, but they don't hear about the hundreds of thousands of people who use this service every single day.
Hey, I just think that's a remarkable event and something that shouldn't just be pushed aside or excused away. There was the first event with WrestleMania. There were not the proper attention given for all kinds of reasons. Everybody getting out at the same time. The WrestleMania ran later than we expected it to run, etc. But rather than Kevin and the folks at New Jersey Transit digging their heels in the sand and saying, you were wrong, they said, let's sit down and let's never let this happen again. And the next event worked smoothly. I mean, that's the way government is supposed to work. And I just think what started as a nightmare, no pun intended, became a lesson resulted in a good outcome. So I think that's a complimentary circumstance.
I agree with that. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Kevin.
Thanks, Senator. And, you know, to that point, lessons learned. There were certain assumptions that were made on our side and by our partners at MetLife. You know, when it rains, there's bad weather. When do they shelter people in place inside the stadium or not? When do they let them out? If events run over, you know, how do we plan for that? And I think you saw we've got lessons learned rather than point fingers. Like we got together with MetLife quietly and said, okay, we need New Jersey to have a sterling reputation for hosting events. And we want MetLife to thrive. We want the state to be known as a place where you want to go to host those events. And that was the attitude where we sat down with top management at MetLife, right down through to the police department, to our customer service reps, say, what is it going to cost to do this right? And, you know, worry about the price tag later. And I think you saw at BTS, we did that. Now, it's, you know, frankly, cost a couple $100,000 more out of our budget. But when you look at the reputational damage, if we don't do that, regardless of who's right or wrong, we can't afford that reputational damage. But that's where the support that we get from the legislature, you know, the senator and from the governor's office, they give us those resources so we can do a first-class job. Our people do want to do a first-class job, and you know, we're very happy with BTS, the outcome. I think everyone's very happy with that. But thank you, Pat, for pointing that out.
Well, I think it's important what you're also saying is about communication again being so important. But when you're talking about your budget being hit by somewhat to make it better service, at the same time, the economic engine that's created for New Jersey by having events like this kind of pays for itself in so many ways or over. The return on investment is so much higher anyway. So I'm sorry it costs your budget, but at the same time, New Jersey benefits from having a first-class program like this. And I think that's important. So we're going to be taking one more break, and I appreciate you coming on, Kevin. I think it's great that you're communicating to people, and we're looking forward to a future with New Jersey Transit continuing to grow and get better every single day. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks a lot.
Pedestrians and motorists share the responsibility of keeping our roadways safe. Pedestrians must obey all signs and signals and use marked crosswalks, or they can be ticketed and fined. Motorists in New Jersey must stop and stay stopped for pedestrians in marked crosswalks. Failure to do so can result in motor vehicle points, fines, insurance surcharges, and community service. Remember, pedestrian safety is a shared responsibility.
Brought to you by the New Jersey Division of Highway Traffic Safety.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Energy efficiency interviews are brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Matthew, you know energy-saving light bulbs last 6 times longer than that old bulb in your lamp.
Yeah, well, I don't even live here.
Matthew, dinner's ready.
I never met that woman.
It's your favorite, Matt. Lasagna.
Ugh, don't you people knock?
Just give me the energy saver.
Millions of kids are using their energy wisely. What's your excuse? Learn more at loseyourexcuse.gov.
Think it's safe to text or talk on your cell phone while you drive? No way, no how, not ever. Nearly 6,000 people died last year from distracted driving. So forget the phone and mind the road. Learn more about distracted driving at KMM.org or call Keep Middlesex Moving at 732-745-4465. That's KMM.org. Funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore.
Welcome back to Mobility Matters. I'm Bill Neary, Executive Director of Keep Middlesex Moving. Today we're talking about transportation in general in New Jersey, New Jersey Transit, and important developments that we need to do in terms of a gateway tunnel project. My guest today has been Kevin Corbett, the president and CEO of New Jersey Transit. We have the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, Patrick Deignan, and we have the chief public outreach and chief spokesman for the Gateway Development Corporation, a commission. No, corporation. I had it right the first
for
time,
now
Steve.
Now it's corporation.
Stephen Sigmund. Okay. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I think what we're understanding mostly about anything else, everybody talks about commuters and the need for a rail tunnel to get into the city, into New York, which is really nice. A person like me, I live in East Brunswick. I work in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. Why should I care mm-hmm. about having a tunnel going into New York until you start looking at the overall impact? So tell us what the Gateway Development Corporation looked like, its origins, and how you think we're going to be able to move this state forward in terms of mobility matters.
Yeah, let me just – thanks for having me, by the way, and thanks for having us. Let me just talk for a minute before I get to the specifics of GDC about the issue you just brought up is why should people care if they don't take this, right? I mean, as you said, you have 800,000 people who rely on these trains directly. So there are a lot of people who are involved, but there are a lot of people who aren't, right? So you're talking about 20% of the nation's economy is represented on the Northeast Corridor. The RPA did a study earlier this year on what would happen if there were even a planned outage of one of the existing tubes. There's one track in and one track out right now, 110 years old. So even if you had a planned outage for 4 years, 2 years of one tube and 2 years of the other to rehab it, it would cost the nation $16 billion in lost economic output. It would cost the state of New Jersey $22 billion in property values, $4.5 billion in property taxes, and for people's lives, much worsening congestion on roads, highways, airlines, buses, et cetera. And, you know, all of us know that congestion
we is also
about
throw
as
in
bad
asthma for
as
children.
It can get, and about 100 deaths from worsening air quality. So this is a no-brainer. Right, we're going to do this one way or another as a nation. We're either going to do it the right way, which is proactively, and how we're trying to do it now by putting together this partnership in the Gateway Development, ultimately the Development Commission, and a partnership between the states and the federal government to get this built. Or we're going to do it the wrong way, which is one of these tubes is going to go down, and we're going to see those kinds of effects, and we're going to have to do it anyway on a much faster timetable and a much less planned out timetable, and probably a more expensive timetable.
Well, a 108-year-old tunnel is bad enough. I mean, when you think about the age of that infrastructure, it's lasted this long and it's done this well.
Yeah.
But then beyond everything else, it's not big enough for capacity that we want to increase. And at the same time, it was damaged during Superstorm Sandy.
Yeah, the tunnel had 13 million gallons of salt water get into it during Superstorm Sandy. It actually served really as a drain for Manhattan. If the tunnel weren't there, Manhattan would have flooded entirely. The problem you have as a result, though, is that you have tubes that are already old and flaking and crumbling in places that now are inundated by salt water. So the electricity gets affected by that, and the signal system gets affected by that because there's ballasted rocks at the bottom of the tunnel. It's a 108-year-old tunnel. Most places, modern tunnels now have direct fixation. The track's right on the concrete, right, which is what the new tunnel would have. In the ballasted tracks, the salt water got in there, the chlorides got in there, and it sends the wrong signals. Most of the time when you get the notification that says there's a signal problem in the tunnel and that's why there's delays, it's a false signal problem because of these chlorides. It's just the train ahead of it being told, essentially, that there's another train right in front of it when there isn't. So you know, these are amazing pieces of infrastructure when you think about it. The Portal Bridge, the existing two-tube tunnel, and Penn Station. I mean, the fact that they've lasted this long and still carry 450 trains a day through them is really quite phenomenal. But this is something that we should have solved as a region, as a nation, 20 years ago. We had a chance to do it with the ARC Tunnel 10 years ago. We cannot let this chance go by.
Well, the ARC Tunnel would have been completed pretty much by now.
Yep.
It would have been done. And so when you look into the – we don't want to just look too far backwards, but when you do look backwards, the investment that they made at the turn of the 20th century wasn't cheap then.
Right.
It wasn't something that was done for free or subsidized by anything else. It was a lot of money, a lot of labor, and a lot of things that went into it, and it worked.
And interestingly, for those of us who are interested in politics, including Senator Deignan, a lot of politics, right? When you read this book that Conquering Gotham – the similarities are remarkable. Really, the arguments over the where it should be and how much it should cost and who should be in charge and who should pay for it, of course, were exactly the same kinds of arguments. And the Pennsylvania Railroad and a lot of smart, forward-looking people overcame them. And that's what we need to do again here. And I just want to just to get back to your question about what is GDC and to thank Senator Duggan and his colleagues for the work that they're doing on the legislation to make what is now a nonprofit in New Jersey, which I represent, into a bi-state commission between New York and New Jersey. And there's really two reasons why that's so important. The first is right now we, GDC, do not qualify for the federal grants that we need in order to build these projects, the CIG grants. You have to be a state or local authority, and that's why this bi-state legislation is so important. And the second reason is because, like lots of these big infrastructure projects around the world, you need a special purpose entity to get them done, right? Because we have great partners in this project, in the states of New Jersey and New York and Amtrak and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey and New Jersey Transit. But all of them have other jobs, as you saw or heard in the conversation with Kevin, right? What GDC is doing and will do as a bi-state commission is the sole purpose is to make sure that we are the coordinating and driving entity to make sure that these projects get done and that we are coordinating with our partners. What an important point, however, is that those kinds of commissions don't get set up overnight, right? There are lots of board members that need to get appointed, lots of officers that need to get put in place that, it has to be sort of stood up, right? And in the meantime, thankfully, we have really good project sponsors, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey on the Hudson Tunnel project and New Jersey Transit on the Portal North project. So we can continue the process with the federal government. And what we can't allow to happen is for USDOT, who's been, as all of us know, doing everything it can to hold up these projects and
I don't know,
slow
all of us
roll
know
them.
That. I know you and I know that.
Yeah.
I know the senator knows that.
Right.
But it did go from a top priority project 10 years ago, which I can't remember the letters. It went from an A to a C or something.
Yeah,
that means it's no longer a top priority on the federal government level.
Medium high to medium low.
Whatever the title.
Yeah,
It's kind of like my grade point average in a lot of ways.
Right. So look, the reality is the politics changed. Right. I mean, even obviously under the Obama administration, there was a partnership developed, a 50-50 partnership, recognizing that not only is this are these projects really important to the region, but to the nation, but also that these are federal assets that Amtrak owns the Port North Bridge and the existing tunnel. And even at the beginning of the Trump administration, the Portal Bridge was rated medium high. There was a budget fight in the spring of 2018 in which Gateway became a bargaining chip in the budget fight, essentially, where the president suddenly decided that he was against the projects, right? And ever since then, the process with USDOT has been much slower. For example, we completed the necessary regulatory work called the EIS for the Hudson Tunnel in under 22 months. Usually a project of that magnitude takes twice as long. That was completed in February of 2018. The USDOT's own permitting dashboard on its website still had and still has March of 2018 as its goal for completing that EIS with us. They are still sitting on it. So it's really important that when and if this legislation happens, that the first thing that we all recognize is that we continue to do the work now and that there are project sponsors now and we are continuing to do all that we can now so that we don't give USDOT an excuse, frankly, to sit on this. And then as we stand up this really good commission, we can be the special purpose entity to make sure that these projects get done and get done right.
Well, I know detractors had said in the past, we don't need a tunnel going to Macy's basement, okay? First of all, my question is, I didn't see that was a problem. Going to Macy's basement isn't a big deal. But we know that actually is not the fact, and the
Correct.
Gateway thing is a little bit different type of design that's not going to have that kind of detraction.
Yeah, so one of the arguments against ARC at the time was that it went to a very deep new station just for New Jersey Transit under Macy's, and you had to take, you know, some fast escalators to get up. The alignment for the new tunnel, the new Gateway Tunnel, goes straight into Penn Station, right? And that's obviously incredibly important to commuters and to Amtrak riders for reliability, first of all. I mean, just the reliability you get from that when you get a, you know, I'm a longtime New Jersey Transit commuter. When I have a train that says it's 35 minutes from Maplewood to New York Penn, it will actually be 35 minutes instead of 45 or 50 or 52 or an hour and 10, like all of us experience.
Like all of Europe experiences, like most of the
right,
world
right, right,
experiences.
Right, exactly. Okay. And then it also allows us the capacity to expand capacity, right, to build Penn South, to expand the capacity so that we get – the ridership is only going up. I mean, it really is incredible in New Jersey how much it's booming and how much that is associated with the access to the economic core in New York. You know, we really have to drive that access forward over the next 20 and 30 years to realize what we can be as a region and as a nation, and that can't happen without increased capacity into Penn.
Well, I know one of the questions we asked originally about Middlesex County – about the need for commuters to get into the city and that type of stuff is an obvious issue. But when you look at economic development, so many towns in Middlesex County itself are redeveloping themselves to be more transit-oriented, mm-hmm. to develop into where transit is going to work. And not just transportation to New York or to Philadelphia, but transit to different locations throughout New Jersey. A transit hub is important. The demographic changes we're seeing, the young people, the millennials they keep talking about, don't want to have cars. They want to use mass transit. And those are the type of, you know, Middlesex County itself is doing enormous amount of work. Metuchen is a classic example of a community that changed itself overnight from a good commuter town to a better commuter town. I know, Senator, you represent Metuchen. I know how important that type of things are for transportation. And when you look at the scope of how Middlesex County fits into this Gateway project on a state level, I'm sure you can explain some of the issues here that's important.
Well, my district is a – I guess an example, a template of what you're talking about, Bill. East Brunswick. My goodness gracious, go to the bus transit hub in the morning. They're near the turnpike. It is absolutely unbelievable to see one bus after another going off into the city. You just mentioned Metuchen. Edison, when they opened the second Edison train station, literally nobody took it. Have you been there recently? They had to build a huge new parking facility in the morning.
And New Jersey Transit built that parking lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. Highland Park now is the mayor of Highland Park and Jimmy Cahill from New Brunswick. Gail Brill-Mittler and Jimmy Cahill are talking about how they're going to better integrate the ability of Highland Park residents to get to New Brunswick. And look at New Brunswick, which is not my goodness gracious. When I was in law school, New Brunswick was literally a city that was at risk. Now it is a booming metropolis, and that's because of access to the train. So it's Plainfield, which is not my district with the two. So you can go throughout our state.
Smaller towns like Den Ellen.
Yes.
It's incredible absolutely. What's going on in some of these places because transit-rich communities have the economic value.
Yep.
And it's what I think what Steve said about the impact on property values for all of us. I mean, whether you're going into New York or you're not going into New York, the value of your property is going to be tied into how many people can get a job and get a job, a good paying job, to be able to buy your home.
There's also an association with the interstate or intrastate, I guess in this case, mobility that you were talking about, Bill, right, which is that particularly younger people don't want to have cars. They want to have access to trains, buses, ride shares, et cetera, that can move them within the state. That all depends on Gateway and on Penn Station access to New York working, right? Because when the trains get backed up into and out of New York, they're not going anywhere, right? So if you're trying to get from Princeton Junction to Edison, right, to commute, you're affected by that because your train is not going to show up.
Which is extremely important to look at because we claim the Northeast Corridor is the artery. All the capillaries and veins are just as important when you think about how things interconnected. I think one of the other things we did talk about earlier was the workforce development part, not just the young professional millennials who need this type of transportation, the entry-level jobs, the warehouse jobs, the retail jobs. Right. All those types of jobs depend upon good mass transit. If you can go on a bus to get to your job or take a train to a bus, you don't need a car. It's a good way to start, and cars are very expensive. Right. And I think those are economic engines that's going to impact everything we do in the future.
And that's an income inequality issue too, right? Because then if there's a lot of people in urban areas who don't have access to cars, if they had access to mass transit that could get them to jobs in the suburbs, that's a game changer for their access to better incomes.
Which is why I think we were talking to Kevin about how important it is to communicate to business leaders. The business people, the bigger businesses and the smaller businesses have to understand how transportation impacts their employees. I think it was one of those things that when we were growing up, everybody had a car, so every car is going to have a problem. It's no big deal. When we were kids, all we wanted was a car. But it's not going to be that way anymore because it's too expensive, it's consuming, and with transportation changes, with the TNCs, with the Ubers and Lyfts, and with the self-driving cars, things are going to change dramatically. And I think you're going to see mass transit change dramatically also. Mm-hmm. You're not going to own a car anymore. You're going to subscribe to a car service.
Yep.
Mass transit is going to be curb to curb with the smaller vehicles picking up 6, 8, 10 people and taking them to their job site.
Hey, we all have the Uber app on our phone. I mean, it's a different world, and it's just beginning to show all kinds of different effects.
Well, I think that's one of the topics that we're going to be talking about on our final show about the future of transportation. But we can't have a good future in transportation and mobility unless we take care of the problems we have today.
Correct.
Unless we don't make the investments that we need to make these things work. It doesn't help to have all kinds of modern trains if they can't get in a tunnel. It wouldn't help us to have a bunch of new engineers if there's no place for them to go.
That's right.
So
Bill, that's important. As I said earlier, is it absurd that we have to even – talk about this. This is so obvious, such a priority for our nation. And let's hope that the powers that be step up to the plate and make this the priority it should be.
Well, if Washington, D.C. decides that $13.6 billion is too much for a tunnel and a bridge, why is $12 billion enough for soybean farmers in the Midwest? It seems to me that we have priorities as a country that we have to look at, where 20% of the GDP is affected.
And they're not mutual. Hey, you can support the soybean farmers and do the tunnel.
I think you can, absolutely. I mean, I agree completely.
And that's the thing. You know, let's bring everybody inside the tent and get things done. I always say Ronald Reagan used to have dinner with members of the Democratic majority. I mean, come on, let's get back to that.
Right, you're not allowed to anymore.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's part of the division in our country that's making these kind of squabbles so unnecessary. Yeah. But it's going to take a tragedy perhaps. I mean, if we're really going to have to worry about something terrible like this tunnel shutting down, you know the type of impact it's going to have on us.
We don't want that to – obviously we don't want that to happen. And I want to reassure listeners that the existing tubes are safe. Right, it is really a reliability issue right now. Right, but there are things that go wrong. I mean, if you remember back in the fall, a piece of catenary on a New Jersey Transit train fell and pierced the back of one of the cars. So thankfully, it was at midnight or something, and there was nobody back there. But if that had been a rush hour, that would have been a very different situation. But to the point about to costs, look, we do feel a responsibility to make sure that we're bringing in these projects at the best value for money, at the best cost that we can, right? And we're spending a lot of time, particularly right now, working with the private sector, opening up a data room so that they have access to all of our data and can tell us where to do geotechnical borings, et cetera, to try to bring down some of those contingencies and bring down some of those costs, because we do need to be responsible with the public's money. In this case, it's going to be the state's money and the federal government's money. So that's something that we take seriously, and one of the reasons that having a GDC matters, to have somebody to oversee that all the time.
Well, and the senator was talking about his sledgehammers and WD-40 to get moving. Sledgehammers are necessary to close the Portal Bridge a lot of times, too,
where
people are out there doing that type
of
stuff.
It's really incredible in 2019.
It really is incredible. Well, I think we've had a very interesting discussion here today. I think the leadership that you're providing, Senator, and Kevin Corbett, the director, and Steve, being the commission, is going to make all these type of things work together, that we can provide this type of service to our residents and understand that transportation is a key to New Jersey. It always has been. From Revolutionary War times to today, it's been a very important part of our – I think Benjamin Franklin's in New Jersey is a barrel open at both ends. New York and Philadelphia are definitely part of our economic engine. But as the state has grown to 9 million people, the internal part of New Jersey is important.
Yeah.
Senator, you talked about the number of commuters in East Brunswick. There's about 4,000 people take a bus every single day to New York. Back when East Brunswick had a population of about 30,000, 4,000 people commuted to New York. Today, East Brunswick has a population of nearly 50,000. 4,000 people take a bus to New York. So they're not all going to New York.
Yes,
but those type of things are working.
So last point, I never heard that Benjamin Franklin line. It's great. So you can think of it this way. Really what Gateway is to make sure that barrel stays open.
That's a good way to finish up the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate all the work you've done. Thank you.